until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until there are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. It is a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion to be pursued but never attained. Now every and until the ignoble and unhappy.
Despite being a mega movie star, Danny Glover has never stopped serving the community through his activism. A commanding African-American lead of film, stage, and TV, he has a lot to say about politics as well, equity, and global justice. He is opposed to the war against Iraq. We caught up with Mr. Glover at WPFW Pacifica Station in Washington just as he landed from New York City, where he had participated in a Not in Our Name speak out the day before. We asked Glover about African Americans' participation in the anti-war movement.
Well, certainly I don't consider myself one of the few African Americans that is speaking out against war. They're young people, students who are speaking out against war. Certainly the position of organizations such as the one that I'm the chairman of, TransAfrica, has spoke out most adamantly against the war, against any war, against any conflict. I think that it's very critical for us at this particular point in time to understand fully what this action means, and what it means not only for Iraq, because we can talk about the supposed weapons of mass destruction in Iraq with really not very much proof of that. We can talk about that a great deal, but there's an empire that's being or has been that has been evolving. And that empire is this country. That empire perhaps is using Iraq as one of its examples, that you get up out of line, you get out of line, and we will deal with you. And the war poses the possibility of incredible destabilization for the region, people in the world, whether that be in the world that pretends to be allies of the United States. Their constituency has been in opposition to the war. The drumbeat is saying something else, and I'm sure the Black Caucus understands and believes, as well as its constituency, that we need to understand what that drumbeat is. What that drumbeat is at this particular point in time. We've all gone through airports, and we know how difficult it is to go through airports now. We all know that there are people of a color who have been held in detention for a considerably long time, periods of time. And we really must understand what this war, the United Nations, the General Assembly has said no to this war. It's been put in the hands of the Security Council. And the Security Council, even though at points in time we may disagree with its makeup and what it represents and how it's controlled, the Security Council has said no to this war, has been resistant to attack Iraq for good reason. We have to, as the Congressional Black Caucus has stated, it made clear in the statement, we have to place this in the hands of a international forum. The security of 5% of the world's population, which this country represents, the security of that 5% should not overshadow the security of the rest of the world, the entire world.
And Mr. Glover, I'd like to honor your courage in speaking the truth as you know it to be. And I know that you have experienced negative response in some ways to your outspokenness and your views around issues of the war and nonviolence. Do you consider yourself to be a pacifist?
Well, I don't know what, I mean, we throw the different terms around, and I certainly, we all know that war is the ultimate place, the ultimate decision to not create a dialogue. It's a decision that affects women and children. Most. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who are most damaged by
yes,
war.
Indeed.
And it's interesting that some poet once said that if men love their sons as much as if they love love war, then there would be no war. You know, if they had loved as much as they could love their sons mm-hmm. and their children as much as they love to arm conflict, then certainly that would cancel out the possibility of war,
mm-hmm. which is so ironic.
It's fascinating, you know, because mm-hmm. it's really men who go to war,
especially men who declare war. What I was going to say, and it's their sons that are the ones that go off to war,
and their one sons that go off to war. And under the ridiculous assumption that a preemptive attack is in some way creating some security for you,
mm-hmm.
and I find that very interesting in the sense that there's something else that's going on,
mm-hmm.
As I was on an early radio station. This morning, saying that we must remain awake in times of change, and that change is often the change which changes the course of history, and if something is happening that is attempting to change the course of history,
mm.
and I'm not so sure that it's to change the course of history for the better. We're in the midst of trying to understand and trying to figure out what does globalization mean in a sense. We're in the sense of talking about globalization and cooperation on a global scale, why can't we in some way talk about that when it comes to war and armed conflict
yes.
with the rest of the world?
Indeed. President Bush has said something to the effect of either you're with us or you're against us. Suggesting that to oppose him or any sort of preemptive strike as he is pushing for means that you're somehow unpatriotic.
Well, a real democracy, as Alexis de Tocqueville would say, who came here in the 1830s and witnessed what he saw was an extraordinary experiment. A real democracy means true participation.
Mm-hmm.
It means an informed electorate.
Actor, activist Danny Glover. A special thanks to Ron Pinchback of WPFW for that segment. Actions to stop the war against Iraq before it starts full scale are global. Producer Scott Gurian spoke about these increasing actions with Andrea Buffa from Global Exchange, a human rights organization dedicated to promoting environmental, political, and social justice around the world.
Despite the fact that the mainstream press keeps saying, where is the peace movement is all over the place. Starting, really, I think, on the anniversary of September 11th, there were peace events going on all over the country because the Bush administration was really starting to beat the drums of war against Iraq on September 11th, and people just came out in full force to say, we don't want another war, it doesn't make any sense, and we don't want many more innocent people to be killed. And so on September 11th, there were about 300 peace events and anti-war events all over the U.S. and all over the world. And since then, things have just been growing. In the last weekend in Washington, D.C., there was a march of about 5,000 people to Dick Cheney's house saying no war in Iraq. And in London, there was a national protest throughout the U.K. where people came to London, and there were more than 250,000 people trying to stop the government there from supporting a war against Iraq. Not only have people been, you know, calling and faxing and emailing Congress in droves trying to get our representatives to represent what we want, which is not another war, you know, in their frustration that the representatives don't seem to be heeding them, folks have been starting to do nonviolent civil disobedience, and there have just been these spontaneous sit-ins. Last week in Seattle, Washington, in St. Paul, Minnesota, and in San Mateo, California, groups of people did sit-ins in representatives' and senators' offices and refused to leave until those people made a commitment and signed a statement that they would not support a war resolution. And they ended up getting arrested. And there are a lot more of those types of nonviolent civil disobedience actions that are going to be happening because there's a group called the Iraq Peace Pledge that has called on people for October 7th, which is this coming Monday, to do nonviolent civil disobedience to try to stop this war before it starts.
Is it your sense that these people who are involved in these different protest events are people who are sort of always involved in the peace movement, or are these just new people who are coming along who are concerned about the political situation that currently exists in this country?
From what I've seen, there are a lot of people at these demonstrations who have never been to a demonstration before. There were people in the sit-in in San Mateo, California, who had never been arrested, who had never participated in a sit-in before. There are a lot of new people coming in. And the student organizing, I mean, I really feel like this is going to be a very big student anti-war movement that's developing. Just next week, especially on Monday, October 7th, there are going to be anti-war protests at Boston University, Boston College, UC Berkeley, Harvard, University of Wisconsin, Iowa State, University of South Florida, et cetera, et cetera. All these folks are young people, you know, who were kids during any kind of anti-war movement, and they are really, really adamant that this doesn't make any sense to them, and they don't want the U.S. becoming a first-strike nation.
Describe the recent work of your group, Global Exchange, in opposition to the proposed war in Iraq.
Global Exchange has been working on a peace campaign since last September 11th. And something that we have done in the last few months is that we've put together a website called United for Peace. And it's at www.unitedforpeace.org. And it's a place where groups all over the country and all over the world are able to post events, anti-war events, peace events that are happening in their community. And so we finally have a website, which is like a central place where anybody who wants to know where is the peace movement can go, and they can say, see, oh, here's the peace movement. You know, here's an event in Nebraska. Here's an event in Japan. Here's an event in France, and find out where they can hook in their local communities. So we have created that website, and we also have one of our founders, Medea Benjamin, has been in Washington, D.C., and has been working with activists there, you know, trying to slow down Congress in its rush to war. They have been speaking out at congressional hearings, sometimes being just escorted from the room and sometimes being arrested. They've been hanging No War in Iraq banners in front of the White House and, you know, trying to just nonviolently do whatever they possibly can to stop the war. So Global Exchange is really trying to bring together all the different groups that are already interested in working for peace and to put out information that folks can get to people who really, you know, aren't sure what's going on and need to learn about what's going on, about, you know, why shouldn't the U.S. oppose why shouldn't the U.S. attack Iraq, and what can you do to stop a war? So we've been getting out lots of information to people and have created this centralized place where everybody can find out what's going on and post their own events and get information that they can then spread to other people.
So finally, aside from visiting your website, unitedforpeace.org, what other actions would you suggest that people take if they are in opposition to the war?
This weekend, October 5th and 6th, is a really important weekend. This is probably the last weekend before Congress votes on a war resolution. There are really big events going on in cities all over the country, especially on October 6th, Sunday. There's a major anti-war event going on in New York City in Central Park, also one in San Francisco's Union Square, in Los Angeles, in Seattle, and Chicago. So I really encourage people to go out to those events and make them be very, very big so that the message gets out that, you know, every single weekend there are protests and they just keep getting bigger and bigger. So I encourage people to go to the website to find out what's going on in their communities and to attend protests this weekend if possible, and as well to realize that because legislators are campaigning, they will probably be in their home districts this weekend campaigning, and we should go to their events and confront them and try to get them to make a commitment that they will not vote to authorize a preemptive war against Iraq.
Andrea Buffa speaking with Pacifica Peace Watch producer Scott Gurian. Thursday at 11 a.m., Republican Senator Rick Santorum's office was taken over by Penn and Temple University students and other members of Philadelphia's community, demanding that the senator listen to their constituents who have shown overwhelming opposition to a war against Iraq. 16 students were arrested. We spoke with one of them as they waited in court this morning for their arraignments.
Well, yesterday, there were about 20 of us who decided to sit in at Senator Santorum's office in Philadelphia because he has been receiving thousands of calls and has met with numerous groups opposing the war, and yet he refuses to recognize publicly the sentiment of so many of his constituents that disagree so strongly with the war. He's continuing to support our president on his resolution, and we wanted him to change his mind on that.
How do you know that he's received communications from constituents who oppose the war?
Well, when we call up his press office and also when we have called up his office here in D.C., all of those sources have told us that the overwhelming majority of the calls that he has been receiving have been in opposition to the war.
And so were you able to meet with the senator when you arrived at his office yesterday?
No, we were not able to meet with the senator. He was in Washington, and we were sitting in at his office in Philadelphia.
And what kind of response did you receive or reception when you went to his office there in Philadelphia?
Well, I mean, it's a public office, and there was, you know, absolutely no security, so we were able to just walk in. Immediately after we did so, we presented our demands to the people that were there in the office. And they said, okay, we hear you, but you're not going to be allowed to stay here. And we said, well, we're going to stay here, and we're not going to move willingly until you address these demands of ours. And at which point, they said that they were calling the police. I never saw the police at that point. The civil affairs showed up and said that we had a right to be there until the building was closing.
Who showed up?
Civil affairs officers from the police department.
Okay. And so you said you had a set of demands for that you wanted to have addressed before you all were willing to leave. What were the demands?
Okay. Well, our main demand was what I was saying earlier. We wanted him to basically recognize the voices of so many of his constituents that are in opposition to the war. We wanted him to acknowledge the risk of both American and Iraqi lives if, you know, in the event of a war. We wanted him to acknowledge that the proposal of preemptive war increases opposition towards the U.S. and inside of the international community. those were our main demands, and our final demand was for him to hold a community or a town meeting to address those.
Mm-hmm. And so when you say you want him to recognize the opposition, do you want him to actually change his position on this, or is it enough that he would just recognize it and acknowledge it and hold a town hall meeting?
Ultimately, it would be great if he was to change his idea and his support on the Bush resolution. But, you know, I think we certainly would have negotiated within some sort of parameters if he had been willing to at least have a town meeting and to at least give some sort of public statement and public recognition that, that people within his area are not all, you know, do not all share the same opinion that he does.
Mm-hmm. So there are 20 or so students sitting in, taking up residence, more or less, in his office in Philadelphia.
Yep, we took it over.
And so what happened there?
Well, we were there. We got in the office probably by about 10:45. We were pretty well situated. And probably about 30 minutes after that, we were pretty much assured that we were going to be able to stay there until 5 o'clock. So we just plopped down. I mean, we spent the rest of the day strategizing about different things that we wanted to do to keep the pressure up within the office. Bye, my missus.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the pressure up within the office. We asked for a conference call with the senator. We didn't get that. We were trying to get the official statistics on the number of people that had been calling into that particular office. We didn't get that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we just had various ways in which we were trying to sort of keep the energy up and sort of the pressure on the people in the office, which would hopefully sort of go back to the senator in Washington.
So you're sitting in court this morning as we speak. Apparently things went sour at some point, or what happened at 5 o'clock when you all were expected to leave?
Right. Well, at 5 o'clock the building was closing, and so the general manager of the building came in and said that he was going to call the police and have us arrested. Which is what happened. At 5 o'clock, the police had come in two times before 5 o'clock and had given us our two warnings. There were four people out of that 20 who did not want to be arrested, and so they left at that point. And there were 16 of us that chose to stay. And so at 5 o'clock, they came in and took us out.
Mm-hmm. Was that pretty straightforward and uneventful? Was there any roughing up or any manhandling or anything of that nature?
It was pretty straightforward. I mean, we had been very, I think, reasonable and definitely committed to our philosophy of nonviolence and civil disobedience all day. So we had made it clear from the beginning that, you know, we were not at all a physical threat. And so I guess... It went as well as it could.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
And so you spent the night in jail, Dana?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
Actually, 16 of us were arrested, and we were taken outside, and there was, of course, a big rally outside surrounding the bus, which we were put in. We were taken to the police station, held for about 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours, and then we were released last night and mm-hmm. given a court date this morning.
Okay. And so what are you being charged with?
We're being charged with disorderly trespassing
disorderly trespassing.
Or deviant trespassing.
Deviant.
Yeah, it's a form of
trespassing. So you're deviant now.
Yeah, I'm afraid we are.
I'm sure your parents are not happy to hear that. They sent you off to college and now you're a deviant.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Have you contacted your parents?
No, I have not.
Do you think they would support you in this effort?
I am sure that they support me in my opposition to the war, and I'm not so sure that they would support civil disobedience. But so it makes me feel good.
Feel as though you have exercised your rights as an American citizen and done your civic duty.
I feel like my rights won't be recognized until the senator recognizes the voices of his constituents, which, you know, all of us are, you know, we're arrested, our Philadelphia residents. He represents us in one way and, you know, obviously in another way he does not. So, yeah, I'll feel a full citizen when those rights are recognized.
Okay, Dana, thank you very much. Congratulations for honoring your truth. Dana Ford, a student at the University of Pennsylvania. Leaders of some of the nation's largest Christian church organizations are expressing their opposition to a preemptive strike against Iraq. In Houston, Texas, people of diverse Christian faiths are of the mind that attacking Iraq is against their religious doctrine. Renee Feltz of Pacifica Station, KPFT, brings us the voices of Herbert Rothschild from Houston's Peace and Justice Center, Minister Ernest Charles of St. Xavier Baptist Church, Lois Baker, chair of the Peacemaking Committee of the New Covenant of the Presbyterian Church USA, and Sam Dunning, a director of the Office of Justice and Peace for the Houston-Galveston Area Diocese.
When the nation is about to make the most momentous decisions of conscience, that is, whether to kill large numbers of people, is the time when leaders of conscience, namely religious leaders, should be speaking up and providing moral guidance to those who look to them for it. But unfortunately, that is the time when considerations, which often they would consider considerations of prudence, overcome their moral obligation to provide that kind of leadership. One might call it prudence, but one might also call it cowardice. But it is important to give church leaders the incentive to communicate to those who look to them here in Houston the views of their national church bodies on this.
And I don't want it to sound like I'm un-American.
I think it's most important to speak now because I don't think anybody has thought through what is going to happen if we do go in and defeat Saddam Hussein. I think there are a tremendous number of unanswered questions. I don't think it's worth it.
Innocent people are going to lose their life on both sides. And, of course, you can understand, as a religious minister, I could never be in favor of that.
And the Catechism of the Catholic Church, in paragraph 2309 of the Catechism, it says quite explicitly that there must be a probability of success and we must employ proportionality. And so when we look for the way in which a war is going to be waged, we have to have some idea of its clearly stated goals and the possibility of success, and then also the proportionate use of force. So Bishop Gregory argues that on behalf of the U.S. bishops, given the nature of modern mechanized warfare, that the impact, the collateral damage that would be inflicted upon the civilian population far outweighs the benefits of actually removing Saddam Hussein.
Even though we have the superior technological force, we will certainly lose the moral ground, if we have any, because they will have what they call righteous indignation on their part.
The Catechism also states very clearly that in order to wage a war, it must be defensive in nature. That is to say, there must be aggression perpetrated against the nation who is going to war, and that aggression must be emphatic, and it must be potentially lasting, or the damage done would be potentially lasting and grave. So what we're arguing is that there is no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved in the September 11th attacks. Barring any evidence of direct aggression against the United States, we do not have just cause to go to war. That is the Catholic Church's official position, which I happen to agree with.
Protestant or Catholic, whether they're Muslim or whatever the situation, when you go into war, people lose their lives. And I think as ministers, we have to oppose war. There has to be another way of achieving peace.
That piece piece produced by Renee Feltz of Pacifica Station, KPFT in Houston. Fidel Rodriguez, Pacifica's Imperatives for Peace producer from KPFK in Los Angeles, talked about war and peace with Saul Williams, the author and activist.
The pledge to resist. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names. Not in our name will you wage endless war. There can be no more deaths, no more transfusions of blood for oil. Not in our name will you invade countries, bomb civilians, kill more children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless. Not in our names will you erode the very freedoms you have claimed to fight for. Not by our hands will we supply weapons and funding for the annihilation of families on foreign soil. Not by our mouths will we let fear silence us. Not by our hearts will we allow whole peoples or countries to be deemed evil. Not by our will and not in our name. We pledge resistance. We pledge alliance with those who have undergone attack for voicing opposition to the war or for their religion or ethnicity. We pledge to make common cause with the people of the world to bring about justice, freedom, and peace. Another world is possible, and we pledge to make it real. We believe that as a people living in the United States, it is our responsibility to resist the injustices done by our government in our names.
Cable, the rubber for our tires, the oil for our car, the chips that make our cell phones and computers work, they all come from there, but they're not owned by them. It's the richest continent, but ironically the poorest people.
Not in our name. Will you invade?
It's important in this society to be able to think for yourself, to be able to raise questions, to be able to question authority, to be able to grow and learn and think beyond what's given to you, because what's given to us is so much less than what is actually there. I do know that that which has been called terrorism and what have you, and that which is, you know, the number one creator of weapons of mass destruction, all that, like, we are those things. Bush represents so much of the things that I believe we, in our moral sense, fight against.
Two autumns and I haven't changed enough. It's September 12th and the sky is falling, the sun has risen. A city built in five dimensions undergoing circumcision. 8 days under Judaic law.
No, not in my name, not in my life, not by my hands, that ain't my fight, not in my name. You built your empire with natives and slaves, like the truth on resurrect, waging war from its grave.
With awareness comes so much responsibility. The more you become aware of, the more that you have to discipline yourself, you know, in order to be a vehicle of that promotes freedom, true freedom, and it, you know, in its freest sense, the freedom that doesn't cost, the freedom that comes, you know, through ideas and ideals.
Big brother, RIP to the powers that be, overcome by the powers of being.
Everything is political.
Today we're going to be talking with Saul Williams, poet, musician, actor. We're going to be talking to him about a song that he wrote called September 12th for the Not in Our Name project. The Not in Our Name being people all over the country standing up and saying no, that we are not going to allow this government and its war on the world to be carried out in our name. Saul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I got to say, man, listening to the song, it really, really grabbed me. I mean, I was there when you did your Art Speaks performance.
Yeah.
And I watched as the audience was, you know, just enraptured with your performance, and especially when you did this, the Pledge of Resistance, and you started to talk about resistance to the war effort. I was wondering what inspired you to go from there to actually write this song?
You know, I don't really know. I think I'm one of many people. You know, I think there's a lot of us that have been looking for a way to add our voice to that voice of resistance, you know. And when I read the Statement of Conscience, you know, for the Not in Our Name initiative, I was inspired. I was inspired by the fact that, you know, there were groups of people thinking about ways in which we, as Americans in particular, could speak up against, you know, the regime that...
Saul Williams, musician and activist. We'll hear the rest of that response on Monday, we promise. Imperatives for Peace, Pacifica's Peace Watch, produced by Scott Gurian, engineered by Rolando Arrieta, consultants Sam Husseini and Larry Binsky, editor Reem Kathuda. I'm Verna Avery Brown for Pacifica's Peace Watch.